Hello and welcome to another episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives. My name is Diana Isaacs. I'm joined with my co-host, Natalie Bellini, and we are at the ADA Sci Sessions in New Orleans, and we are so excited to interview our very special guest, Dr. Eugene Wright. And so if you don't mind, we're so happy you're here. If you can just introduce yourselves and describe a little bit of your background for our viewers and listeners.
Sure. And it's great to be here with you. My name is Eugene Wright. I'm an internist by training. I've spent my career in medicine across several clinical areas. Started off as what I call a country doctor in southeastern North Carolina. Went from there back into academic medicine at Duke University Medical Center. Saw patients there clinically. Then I came back into southeastern North Carolina and went more into medical administration. Served as the medical director for our primary care network and actually grew that to primary care and specialty network. Finished up my career there as the chief medical officer for the health system, but spent a lot of time in dealing with patients with diabetes and particularly those patients who were under-resourced. I spent a fair amount of my career working in charity clinics, clinics run by the Catholic Charities to take care of the underserved patients. So these were like patients I like to say that were didn't have Medicare, they didn't have Medicaid, and many of these people were really had some of the worst diabetes. And our challenge in the clinic was to provide them with good care.
Wow. It's incredible. You're right. There's that between. I mean, you want someone to not make enough so that they qualify for Medicaid. They're not old enough to qualify for Medicare yet. It's that working poor that truly struggle in the United States.
And we learned a lot from that, that these folks actually are some of the most appreciative folks when you can offer them things such as diabetes technology. And the biases that we had about who would benefit from technology went out the window. Some of these people are the most compliant, adherent patients when you give them the opportunity to take control of their diabetes.
So speaking of diabetes technology, I know we were actually all involved in this new ADA scientific statement about diabetes technology in primary care. And would love, I know you've been leading the effort, so I'd love to, if you could tell us a bit about that, how it got started and where we're at right now.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We really got started with this with an ADA convened meeting in December of 2024 that was trying to identify what are some of the barriers to adoption of diabetes technology. We've known for a long time that diabetes technology can significantly impact patients' outcomes. It significantly impacts their behaviors. But yet the adoption of that and the implementation of that into practice, in particular, primary care practices, mm-hmm. where most of the patients with diabetes are seen, was dismally slow. So the core challenge for us was to figure out that how we could take this rapidly progressing, clinically significant technology and get it adopted into primary care. So in October of 2025, the ADA, along with the Diabetes Technology Society, convened a meeting of the key stakeholders representing not just physician groups, but pharmacists, clinical diabetes educators, the whole group of patients, of physicians and clinicians who are involved with the care of patients with diabetes. And we sought about going to identify strategies to overcome each of the barriers that we had identified in the earlier meetings. These barriers, we tried to develop specific strategies, recognizing again, primary care is not a monolithic group. There are lots of different opportunities in primary care. So we wanted to focus on both the policy, the insurers, as well as the implementation of CGM and diabetes technologies in primary care.
That's awesome. Yeah. So I'm curious, and we all know CGM is an amazing tool, helps people so much, recommended by the standards of care now for all people that could benefit. But how do we get primary care to actually create workflows to get their patients access, and not just access, right? Because it's also looking at the data and using the data for medication management.
Right, right. So there's lots of opportunities. I think the first thing in primary care, we have to convince our colleagues that this is not just clinically relevant, but it actually will save them time, help them provide a higher quality of care, improve their satisfaction as well as their patient satisfaction. And for those who are really considering this, may actually help reduce some of the disparities in healthcare that we see.
Right.
So once they're convinced of that, I think we then have an opportunity to understand on the individual practice level, what are some of the barriers, and then develop workflows, creating team-based care. One of the things that we address in the statement is the opportunity to use telehealth and to help build a team for those clinical situations where the practitioner may be under-resourced. We can bring in resources through telehealth that have been shown to be very effective in not only onboarding, but interpretation, and provide those kinds of resources for the busy practitioner.
Yeah, I think that's great.
I love that idea. I think, you know, one of the challenges, I practice in an endocrine practice. When I see someone come in who's been referred from primary care, I can count on one hand the number of times, because we print on a laser jet color printer, the first download ever, and I say, have you ever seen this before? No. Less than five times.
Yeah.
So there is that gap, right? Well, we can get them on them, but now what do we do with the data? Because if you have an A1C of 7.8, what do I do? Well, it depends on when you're spiking. Are you spiking after meals? Are you dropping overnight? Are you over-basalized already? What is happening? And that's what CGM gives us.
You know, I think you're right on there. And I think the uniqueness that I have found, and I think it helps sell this to our colleagues, is that CGM has the ability and the reports, the AGP, to take a large data stream and turn it into actionable information.
Yes.
It's the reason that we graph temperature charts in the hospital. No one wants to look at a bunch of series of numbers. You see the pattern, both you and the patient are now informed. In terms of interpretation and how to do that, this is where the team, I think, really can get engaged. Looking at from the medical assistants, making sure that AGP is printed out when they go in.
Right.
Right? Onboarding. And you have people in the practice who are very technically inclined and can do that, not only can do that, want to do that.
Right.
Because they are now working at the top of their ability to help improve the care for the patients. So it's helping practices understand, use the resources that you already have. In fact, this may save you time.
I think that is exactly it. If we can get someone to understand that this, and I think some of it has just been the way CGM was developed, and you can have 12 pages of reports if you want them.
Yep.
And so you look at that and you say, I can't do this, right? But if we can keep it to one page, which is what the AGP report is, and be able to teach someone to be able to just glance at it and say, this person's having lows at this time of day, this person, because if you say to someone in clinic, are you having a lot of lows? And if they haven't had them in 48 hours, the answer might very well be no, but they may be having, like the last 2 weeks, they could have had them every other day. So I think some of it is helping with the, where is the pattern? What is happening? And be able to have a really open, robust conversation rather than you didn't bring your meter, right? Or you did and you checked three times this past month and now your A1C is 7.8. What do we do with that, right? That's the difference right there.
You know, you're right on. And I think what CGM and the AGP has allowed us to do is to ask better questions.
Yes.
You know, if we ask better questions, we'll get better answers. The example that I use when I talk to my colleagues, if I ask my patients, are you taking your medicines? All of them will say yes.
100%.
If I ask them, how many times do you miss a dose of medicine? I get a different answer.
Yes.
Okay? A better question gives you a better answer. The same is true with CGM. We now get to see what we couldn't see before. And the patients understand that sticking my finger, which is painful, and I have to do it too many times a day, and I don't know what these numbers mean that I get. When I see this pattern from this painless device that I wear, and it gives me an idea, oh, when I do this, I get this result. It's eye-opening. And it helps me now as a patient, when I talk to my practitioner about what are my challenges, I can point to those things.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point. And with the AGP report, we can train anyone to get pretty good at recognizing those patterns and the time and range. Recently, I had an instance where I had someone who kind of one of these typical, right, A1C 7.8, but the report was showing this example of extreme overbasalization, like extreme. But the thing is, based on the person's doses, it didn't totally make sense. Like, they had mealtime insulin. It wasn't a situation where the doses were way off, not like a glargine 100 units and no mealtime insulin. So that led me to asking the questions, right? Like, what's going on with your doses? Like, how much are you actually taking? And through that conversation, it turned out the person ran out of their mealtime insulin and was using their long-acting for all of the doses. But I wouldn't have asked that question. Right. How would I have known to ask that question, right? And that's some of the power of CGM.
One of the things that we're learning from CGM now is that people who are on mealtime insulin don't always take it at the same time.
Right. No.
Can you imagine that?
Right.
Imagine.
But now when they see that pattern and they see the impact that that may have, it helps. It's a different way of teaching without being judgmental.
Right. That is exactly
it's not being judgmental. Right. It's just an observation. And I like now start the patients, tell me what you see here.
Yes, absolutely.
Help me understand what's going on.
Yep. Yeah.
And that way now patients can really take charge. I'm in charge of this. Let me tell you what happened here. Let me tell you what happened here. Without judgment, we can then talk about ways to correct that or ameliorate some of those things.
Right. So, yeah, we've talked about a lot of the benefits of CGM. I think, you know, when it comes to workflows, and you kind of alluded to this, that every practice may be a little different. They have different people on their team, different resources. And I think that's one of the things in this statement. I know we talked about a technology champion, for example, someone that really is excited about this, sees the value in it, and wants to be the expert resource for their clinic. And, you know, there are certain logistics, right? Like the connecting people, which is not so hard to do. It's usually a simple code, but you still need someone to connect the patients to your portal. You need to develop a clinic account, right? And then figuring out, well, who is going to access the data? Are they going to print it out? Are they going to paste it into your note? Are you going to get it seamlessly through your electronic health record, right? Like, those are all some of the big questions to figure out.
Well, this is one of the things that we, again, when we talked about the statement, we talked about getting the manufacturers involved with this.
Right.
There's no reason that they, with all the QR codes that we have going around every day to day, why can't people enroll using a QR code?
Yeah.
Right.
They don't have to have a password and remember all that. They can get enrolled and we can keep their data secure. We can assure them of that. There are ways in the statement that we address that all of the stakeholders can contribute to making this easier to do the right things.
Absolutely. And I think it's interesting because when someone says things like, well, in our practice, the MA or LPN or whoever it is that's working with me that day has pulled up my reports ahead of time. We use Epic and we put them in under media. And, you know, we have a dot phrase now that will pull in some basic Dexcom data. Here we are. And they say, well, how did you get your MA to do that? Well, we trained them. And you don't have to be a special endo.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a special endo MA or LPN. What you need is training. And so just like someone in a different clinic may have to do, you know, other testing, why can't it just be kind of like that? So we have people doing all kinds of, we have flu shot clinics and we have this and we have that and
Precisely.
We have breathing testing and we have all kinds of things. This is just part of the workflow
and this
that then gets us the data.
That's so important because this is part of building that team and assigning different responsibilities to different people. And some of that, interestingly enough, can be done through telehealth.
Yes, absolutely.
So using all the levers that we have used for other chronic diseases,
we need to
put it into diabetes technology.
Exactly. We need to do that in order to. So if we have an MA working from home doing something different, they can pull up everyone for tomorrow. It doesn't have to be it doesn't have to be, I don't need the last, you know, 4 minutes ago glucose. Yep. I need the 14 days. So if you did it the day before, getting that workflow set up for the practice may look different depending on where they are. And ultimately saying, what would make it easiest for you to improve the outcomes? We can't take on more patients, right? So in endocrinology, we have to take the sickest of the sick, right? We have to take the people that need, wherever they are. There are so many people with diabetes that don't need to come to endocrinology, but do deserve technology. And I think that's what we have to think about. They deserve the technology. but how do we maximize the use of it? Because you put a CGM on and their A1C drops all by itself, 0.7 to 1.2, somewhere around there, because the person says, wow, three beignets and this was a little too much. I need to not do that again, or I need to learn to walk after it, or I need to do whatever, right? Well, now what, right?
We've seen now that the ADA has moved their position from patients with type 1 to patients on MDI to all patients with diabetes can benefit from CGM, from diabetes technology.
Yes.
And CGM is kind of the core. I think that's the basics of diabetes technology. So as the ADA has moved, what we want to do now is help our policymakers, our insurers, who can facilitate that access. Again, we're all in this for the same reason. We want to increase the quality of care for our patients. We want to make this easy for them, relieve some of the burden that they have with living with diabetes every day. Technology has the ability to do that in such a seamless, easy way. Why aren't we doing it?
Right. And we've talked a lot about CGM, but let's also just briefly touch on insulin pumps. I think this is where, you know, ADA, like we should be expanding into type 2. And even now this year, they've said type 2 on basal, not meeting the goals. Instead of doing this, add an injection with breakfast, lunch, dinner, you know, like you could go straight to an AID system. And I think it's very interesting because, like you said, we don't necessarily have the capacity in endocrinology, but pumps are pretty new for primary care.
You know, it's interesting. As pumps have evolved, you know, the initial pumps really required a lot of calculation, a lot of figuring. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we've learned is that you can be very literate, but not very numerate.
Right.
And so doing those calculations can be a little tricky.
Yes.
But you're right. As the systems have evolved, that they are now much easier to use, don't require all the calculations. And some of them are what I would call very intuitive in that they are able to sense things and make adjustments for you. Patients love it because it's, again, relieving some of that burden for them.
Yeah.
Practitioners, if they think about it, will like it because it relieves some of that burden for them. You know, what do I do next? When do I take this, titrate this, that? Allow the technology to do that for you.
Right. Yeah. And I think what you mentioned earlier about partnering with the companies really comes into play with pumps, because the pumps, all of them have their own trainers that we can utilize to actually get trained on the device. And often they'll also do setting adjustments in the first couple of weeks to fine tune things. So that really helps, I think, to facilitate the implementation. Then we just need to know how to prescribe it and then kind of some basic if things need adjusting.
And that's a key component of the statement, too, is that the manufacturers of the pump companies, CGM manufacturers, have stake in this, too.
Yes.
They have to help us make it easy for the patients to have access to these and to train them, onboarding and maintenance, troubleshooting.
Right.
Great example. If something's not working, they shouldn't call me. They should have a rep that knows all about that particular device, the nuance of that, to help them. Mm-hmm. And you think about that. We have that in just about every other piece of technology that we use.
Right.
You know, we don't call. We call a technician that works with this all the time. They walk us through either virtually or come to us, see us where we are. And they walk us through how to repair that, fix it, or they send us a new unit.
Right.
The same should be true for this life-saving, life-changing technology.
And I do believe that as all of the companies are very aware that there is this in the change in the guidelines, that there is this need to make things as simple as possible so that people do not, and it reduces the burden for the people with diabetes, it truly does. So can I say this meal is my average meal, this meal is bigger? Can we consistently put in the same grams of carbohydrate if it's a pump that needs grams, right? We can have someone put in 20 for everything and I can adjust the carb ratios in the background and we're good to go, right? We can make it work, right?
And that makes a difference.
And it makes a difference.
Because it's relieving burden.
Yes. Someone said to me the other day, why would a person want a pump if they're well controlled? And I said, well, first of all, it's not control. It is a person. And they have to think about
great point.
All of the things. They have to think about what's going on and how to do it and adding all those things together. And you use an insulin pump and a lot of that burden is taken away. You might underdose for breakfast. Guess what? It's going to fix it on the back end for you. You go to bed at 180, you wake up at 100. You go to bed at 80, you wake up at 100. It reduces the burden. It makes someone feel more empowered.
with diabetes.
And that's so important, right? Because diabetes, people who live with diabetes, it becomes such an important part of their life. Every minute, every day, they're thinking about what's going on, what do I have to do? And you can relieve just a little bit of that burden. You've restored the quality of life for that person.
Yes.
And you've given them an opportunity to worry about something else
that's
very important to them.
Right. Plenty of other things to worry
about. Yes, exactly.
Right.
Imagine.
So, but I think that that's important. And I think we as practitioners and we as healthcare professionals, once we get beyond the numbers of diabetes, we have to see the people as people.
Yes.
And what can we do to help this person? That's where I think you look for all the resources you have available, and technology has demonstrated that it can reduce that.
And my whole thing is at least offer the choice. You know, someone can decide, okay, I don't mind injections. I'm managed on it. I don't mind. But like, we need to offer the choice. Like, it's not right that we just, they're on injections by default. And so many people are, especially in type 2, so many are on multiple daily injections and have never been offered a pump. Ever.
It's so funny because you say that one of the things that we're learning, and we talk a little bit about this, is readiness on the part of the clinician, but also readiness on the part of the patient.
Yeah.
The patient may not be ready for technology today.
Right.
But maybe next week.
Right. So you
next
offer
month.
It.
You offer it. And you show them the benefits and you give them an opportunity to think about it. You've got great infographic material that talks a little bit about how it works and all that. Just because they're not ready today doesn't mean they won't be ready next month, next year.
Right.
You give them the opportunity.
I totally agree. It's about starting the conversation.
It's starting the conversation. And that's such an important point.
Yeah. Another thing I want to mention is just, you know, we talked about some solutions, like there can be virtual clinics to help with pump management, but also leveraging other team members like pharmacists. And we are seeing that. I've been seeing a lot of that lately. Pharmacists in even primary care settings that are taking on this ownership of, hey, like, I can train the patients on the pump and adjust the settings. And so that's another great resource.
You know, in our health system, we have started to use clinical pharmacists as a part of the primary care team. Mm-hmm. They are in chronic disease management. And it's not a new concept. We've seen this over the last 20 years with other diseases. We've just starting to get into this with diabetes management. And it has made a world of difference. The practitioner has relieved some of their burden. It has allowed the pharmacist to do, who has already involved with medication reconciliation and understanding how medicines interact with the patient. And diabetes is a perfect example. And technology is just another tool that can be managed, used under protocols or operating with the clinicians to really optimize the care for the patients.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Wow. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to this presentation and to eventually the publication of the scientific statement.
Well, I think that the paper and the statements really are the beginning of the conversation.
The backbone. Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
You know, this is not a one
and
done.
We're not done. Yeah. We are
this
not
is,
done.
This is the identifying the initial strategies.
Yep.
As we start with our implementation projects, we will learn lessons. We will incorporate those into future statements, recommendations, and hopefully as we bring on more stakeholders, more endorsers with this, we will really start a movement to really optimize the use of diabetes technology and get it to do what we know that it can do and helping relieve the burden for the patients and the practitioners.
For all people.
For all people.
Not just the people that get lucky enough to show up in an endo office, but for all the people, they deserve it as well. And that's the most important part of this is if you're in primary care, if you don't have access, there are states that have like two endos, right? They have no diabetes. There's not the support. Those people need this. They deserve the same access to the care.
Well,
and this
you
is
know
what's important.
That there's the majority of the counties in the U.S. don't have an endocrinologist.
They don't, right?
Right. So how do we leverage what we
exactly
know works and make it for the people who are taking care of most of the patients with diabetes? And we know that there are a number of patients with type 1 diabetes that are being seen in primary care.
Right. Right.
Who may or may not have access to the technology. So you're right. Making this available for all patients with diabetes.
Yes. Awesome. Exactly.
Oh, that's great. A great note to end
on. Wow.
We want to thank you so much for joining us. And thank you all for tuning in. That wraps up this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives.
Thanks, everyone.